You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of Crossed Up. It's Tuesday, March 12th. Anthony Sanfilippo is still down there in the Tampa Clearwater area. I'm still sitting here in South Jersey. Let's talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, Anthony. We are kind of in the middle of this. We are in the slog of spring training now. Everybody gets down there mid-February, end of February. It's exciting. You know, who put on some muscle? Who has expectations? Which prospect can push the envelope? And everyone's excited and happy to see baseball. All right, now you fast forward 3-4 weeks, and we're in it now. We're in the thick of the spring training run. Most of the storylines have kind of calmed down. There are some positional battles on this team in the back of the bullpen. Still some question marks out in center field. But, man, like I've said it the last couple times we've talked, like this is a slog to me. Like, just get me to the 28th. I keep saying it. Just get me to the 28th, and it's going to go on like a light switch. It's a good team. There's a lot of expectations. It's going to be fun. But right now, I'm having a hard time reading about the Junior Marte battle with Michael Mercado or Luis Ortiz in the bullpen. Like, so you're down there. You're more plugged in. You're more dialed in. Help me.
Yeah, it is for most guys on this team, it's just get to the 28th. You're 16 days out, stay healthy, get there. And they all have that mentality. It's funny, is after the game yesterday, I even asked Wheeler about it yesterday. You know, Zach Wheeler pitches 3 innings, doesn't give up a hit, right? Throws 47 pitches, he had 2 walks, mixed in 5 splitters, struck out Soto on him a couple times, right? Like looked pretty good. And, you know, afterwards, he's like, yeah, I feel good. And like, he's not saying much. And it's just like, and I said, and it was funny because he was answering the first couple questions. And I said to him, are you just trying to get to opening day? He's like, yeah, man, that's it. I'm just trying to get there.
He feels like that, yeah. Too, man. You know, at least we're on the same page there. Because even that story, like, don't get me wrong, adding a new pitch to an arsenal of a guy that has been at the top of the National League in terms of starting pitchers over the last handful of years, like, that's a big deal. Like, maybe that does take his game to a different level. It adds a little extra to it. Maybe this year he pulls down a Cy Young Award. Okay, great. But even that, like, it's not like he's some middling guy that has figured something out and now all of a sudden he's going to shoot up to possibly be a top of the rotation guy. You're talking about, like, how much room for improvement is there really going to be there, you know? So, like, even that, I'm like, okay, so Zach Wheeler is going to be Zach Wheeler this year. Like, that's awesome. You should be excited about it, but it's not exactly a captivating storyline to me in the middle of March.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. And I think that it's the only storyline of it is that, hey, he, you know, lefties did okay against him last year. Mm-hmm. It's not like they hit him hard.
Listen, this is a real development.
That's the problem,
though. This is a real development. It matters. And I'm hosting a Phillies podcast and cover the team peripherally. And I'm like, yeah, all right. Like, I don't know, man. Is it that I'm just like bogged down in life and dealing with other things that I can't get all yoked up about a new pitch for Zach Wheeler right now? Like, I guess, again, when the lights go on,
you'll get yoked up for it when he strikes out 9 guys.
Yeah, first time he buries a left-handed hitter in the middle of the order with a couple guys on base with it. Yeah, yes. I'll be pumped up, right?
They could be pumped, like, where did this come from? This is awesome.
Yeah, listen, I know. I guess one of the things that people are starting to talk about, this usually happens this time of year when you get to this point in spring training, it's who's going to be the opening day starter? And we know that Aaron Nola has been the opening day starter for the last handful of years. Do you care? Does this matter? Is it just kind of a, you know, I know it doesn't matter over the course of 162 games, but in terms of the honor of it, you know, how do you think the Phillies should play this? Because we were talking before the show, going through the calendar, and it kind of lines up where they can sort of do whatever they want here. You know, like, they don't have to say, well, listen, it would have been Wheeler, but, or it would have been Nola, but the schedule didn't line up. They have some flexibility in how they approach this.
Yeah, and they've created that flexibility. And I think they created the flexibility because of the uncertainty of Aaron Nola's child being born. Nola told us that the due date is April 4th. So you say, well, March 28th, probably okay. But I mean, you know, you never know the first kid. You know, sometimes those due dates are a little off. With the
first child. I had my kid on opening day last year, right? So yeah. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, it happens, right? So what they've done is they've adjusted the schedule so that both Nola and Wheeler would be available for opening day. The interesting thing is going to be to see if Nola – so they pushed Wheeler back a day. He pitched yesterday. He was originally on pace to pitch on Sunday. They didn't send him to Bradenton, which is an hour away. Instead had him pitch at home, which could be a – nod to him being a veteran, but it also lines him up that he could be available for opening day. Nola would be scheduled to start tomorrow. The Phillies did not announce a starting pitcher for tomorrow yet. So if Nola pitches tomorrow, he remains online to pitch opening day. So you have the flexibility of going with either one. And they, you know, Rob Thompson, the last we asked him, which was a few days ago, was not willing to make a call on the opening day starter. I think it's it's an honor. You're right. It's an honor. It's a tribute thing kind of thing. And I know that Nola said he thinks Wheeler deserves it. And Wheeler does deserve it. There's no question, but I don't think Zach Wheeler cares.
Either of those guys care. That's the thing. Like, there are guys around baseball, right? There are guys around baseball that it would be a slight, they might be offended by it. They might carry that with them. These guys, I don't think they don't give a shit. No. I really don't think either of them do.
No, I don't. And the only thing about Nola is that, I mean, it is kind of a cool streak that, you know, he's done six in a row. If he gets one more, it's the second longest in team history. He's got a shot to set that record over his time of his contract. So maybe you kind of look at it from that perspective. If you're the Phillies and say, listen, both of these guys are going to pitch against the Braves.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe you do that just to give, you know, keep that kind of intact. Otherwise, yeah, you're right. Neither one of them really care. They're going to pitch either Thursday or Saturday.
Well, I'm glad that we addressed that. You know, as this thing moves along here, you look at the box scores, you might watch some of the games on television or stream them online. And again, we've said it. Diving too much into player performance of veterans, I don't think it's really a wise thing. I think it's a waste of time. I think it's a useless exercise for the most part. Certainly you want to see guys produce as opposed to struggle, but I just don't think you can read too much into the actual performance and outcomes here. And I think everybody for the most part understands that. One guy though, that I think you have to kind of read into the performance of a little bit is the one that they desperately, desperately want to start in center field this season. That's Johan Rojas.
Yeah.
And we all know the story by now, 300 hitter in the regular season, a lot of energy, you know, a fantastic defensive player, struggles in the postseason, goes 4-for-43. They've given him a ton of at-bats here this spring. They want him to win this job. They want to see him demonstrate that there has been some growth offensively in his game. And he's 5-for-31 this spring, and he's looked pretty dismal at times too. Like, if you watch these at-bats, I don't think that you would come away from it saying, well, it's been the product of bad luck. He just looks overwhelmed for the most part. He had a bad base running mistake the other day. I know he was picked off after a hit. There's just... here's my question. We're looking at a guy dating back to last postseason now that's 9-for-74 at the plate. They want him to be the starting center fielder. Should he be the starting center fielder, and will he be the starting center fielder?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. Do I think he deserves it? No. And I say that as someone who's watched a lot of these at-bats since I've been down here. He's not taking a lot of pitches. He's averaging less than 3 pitches an at-bat. Okay, which is, it was like 2.8, and then I didn't add in the 4 from Sunday because I wasn't at the game on Sunday, the 4 there, the 4 at bats there, he, you know, I think it was like 2 and 3 each time there as well. So he's really not seeing a lot of pitches. And I asked Rob Thompson about this, and he said the person who's in the number 9 spot needs to be a grind out at bats in his mind. Like, he wants that person to take up 20 pitches over the course of a game, out of the number 9 spot in the lineup. And so Rojas isn't doing that. He did it for the one game against Toronto, I guess it was, on Saturday. He grinded some out. You know, he had a 4, a 7, and I think a 5 pitch at bat. The 7 pitch at bat was the longest at bat of the spring that he's had.
Well, do they want to see him? Do they want to see him work the counts here and try to be that guy, or do they want him to attack hittable pitches early in the count and get some hits and feel good about himself?
Like, well, what's that's more important right now. I think that it's kind of shifted on him a little bit, right? I think that they wanted him to swing only at strikes, right? So the initial thing coming into the season, when we were talking to him when I first got down here, it was, just lay off, stop chasing pitches, swing at strikes. So it was to be a little bit more selective, but what he hasn't been at all this spring, because he swung at the first pitch, 16 of the first 27 plate appearances he had. He swung at the first pitch. So he hasn't really been selective. And then when he's making contact, Bob, it's weak contact. And look, not every stadium down here has the ability to do the StatCast to measure the exit velocity, right? But the ones that do, he's averaging 76 miles per hour on his exit velocity is the average. He's beating it into the ground a ton. And look, that's okay when you have speed, right? You can beat out some of those, and he's bunting on some. And so, okay, fine. But the reality of it is when he's swinging, he's just not making good contact at all.
So what do you do? Because here you are now, and I said it, and the one thing that amazed me, kind of going from last October, everything falls apart. Everyone kind of goes their separate ways this winter, and we're all under the assumption that, yeah, listen, there's a pretty good chance here that he's not going to be on the opening day roster. There's a pretty good chance that he's going to start the season in the minor leagues. They're going to have to get him more at-bats down there, get his confidence. This is a team that's in win-now mode. They want to try to compete for a division title. We all know that they have World Series aspirations. You can't have a guy running around out there that's going to hit 190 for you. All of a sudden, you get a month or two into the winter. I don't know if they had some plans that kind of went sideways on them, but then we were sort of told, no. This is the guy that we want to win the job. It's his job to lose. And I watch this unfold right now and say, well, he's losing it, but it still sort of seems like he's going to be the guy. Does it not? Like, doesn't it almost feel like the Phillies are just going to say, all right, you know what? This is how we're going to start.
Yeah. I mean, it does a little bit, Bob. I mean, like, they really want him to win the job. They really want him to win the job. But I looked at that lineup yesterday. They play the Yankees. Right. Wheeler's starting, and it had a real opening day vibe to it as far as a lineup. You know, the only thing that I thought about it was, you know, Brandon Marsh isn't in this lineup because he's obviously not back yet from his knee.
That's coming, right? This week is probably
he's been,
this week.
Yeah, he's been taking live BP. He was in a simulated game, I think, or an inter squad game rather. He got four at bats as a DH in that. I saw him working on base running yesterday. Okay. So he's close. And I think he's going to get into a game here probably, if not by the end of this week, at the beginning of next week. So he is close. But the lineup was Schwarber DH, Turner shortstop, Harper at first, Real Muto catching, Stott at second, Bohm at third, Castellanos in right. Merrifield was in left for Marsh, and Christian Pache played center field batting ninth.
It's interesting. Pache's been good this spring. Had a hit yesterday, a couple home runs.
Yeah, the hit yesterday was impressive. And I talked to him about it afterwards yesterday. The hit yesterday was interesting because it's exactly what we're talking about with Rojas. So he had two breaking pitches, good breaking pitches that he laid off of. Okay, then he gets a ball kind of, you know, in on him a little bit, and he stays back, and he's able to go with it the other way. And he laces it into right field for a single. It was just a more advanced approach than what Rojas has had. And that's not to say that Christian Pache is the answer in center field, because he's probably not long-term the answer in center field. But if you look at Rojas and say, this is a guy we want to be the answer in center field, let's let him develop properly. We could get by with Christian Pache for a month or two to start the season in center field. And then when Rojas is hitting is come around and it's synced up his lower half with his upper half, then we can bring him back and put him back out there, and all's right with the world. And I think that that's really where they're going to go with this.
It's interesting. I was reading Matt Gelb's latest roster projection. I guess it came out yesterday morning. And he had the five outfielders as Marsh, Rojas, Castellanos, Merrifield, and I believe Cave. The idea being, and I know that we actually talked previously about the possibility of the Phillies not rostering a left-handed bench bat because hey, at the end of the day, you don't really have to hit for any of these right-handers except potentially Johan Rojas. And if you really needed to do it, you either have Marshall on the bench because Merrifield's starting, or you could just do even up for Merrifield, right? Yeah. Like if you really wanted to, if you got into a tight spot and you're like, hey, we got to burn them. Do you suspect, though, that the Phillies are going to carry a left-handed bench bat? And if so, who's it going to be? Because I don't want them to, and it's really weird. Now, one more thing right here, and I'll let you run with it. I know, like, I'm overvaluing Christian Pache. Like, I've had a tendency to do this even dating back to last year. I like him, though. Like, I probably like him more than most people do. I look at him and say, all right, the offense isn't advanced. I think he's going to be functional, though. I think that there's a higher floor with him than there is with Johan Rojas offensively. And I still think that he's, you know, above average center fielder. And I'm like, damn, the guy's 25 years old, former elite prospect. Like, you really want to run the risk of letting him rip and see if someone takes him, you know, and doesn't clear waivers. Like, I know I'm overvaluing him. I know you could probably maybe even clear the guy through waivers. And if you don't, in the long run, is it going to kill you? Probably not. But I just don't like the vibe here right now with this.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of outfield depth in this organization. And that's part of it. And that's part of the reasons. And it's another reason why. And I'm not, who am I to question Matt Gelb? Gelb's the most connected writer that, you know, the covering the Phillies there is. And so, like, his projection could be spot on. I just get, you know, you go off of a little bit of feel sometimes and just in conversation and how things are going. And I don't think that they want to lose Pache. I think you're spot on with this because they don't have a lot in center field if Rojas fails. If Rojas fails, you're basically saying Brad Marsh is your everyday center fielder again. Brandon Marsh. I went with a hockey player. Brandon Marsh is your everyday center fielder again, which obviously, you know, he's better in the corner. And then Whit Merrifield has to play all the time in left field as opposed to being a 350 at bat guy who is much, you know, where he's much more beneficial for you. So, like, I look at Pache and say he's more valuable because he can play the position better than anybody else other than Rojas defensively. To answer your question that started this whole thing, you know, if they go with a left-handed bat, is it Jake Cave? And this is where I'm going to disagree with Matt again. I think it's David Dahl. David Dahl's gotten a lot of looks in spring here. He's and the one thing with Dahl, though, is, you know, he is on a minor league deal. And he told me yesterday that he is 6 days shy of 5 years of major league service time, which means that he does not have an opt-out. Like, it's an automatic, if you're 5 years experience, that you can have an opt-out on a minor league contract. He does not have one. So he would have to start in the minors if the Phillies wanted him to, and then work, you know, try and work his way into the lineup. And so there is that possibility because Cave is out of options that maybe you say, okay, well, Cave can also play first base. He's out of options. We'll start the season with him, but then we'll, you know, quickly pivot to Dahl if necessary. I just think Dahl's looked better than Cave in spring. He just really and the thing that's most impressive, Bob, and I wrote about this. I think
I just want to let you know you're killing me. And anybody watching this on YouTube, you have the Florida sun like right over
I'm
your
trying.
Left
I'm trying to prevent it.
And when you move,
I'm trying to prevent. See,
I'm trying to move the light.
I'm trying to move the computer so that I'm doing so I block it anyway.
That's why if you've been watching this online, I'm dipping my eyes right now, not because I'm not listening to you, just because I'm like, yeah. I'm not looking at this.
I'll try and stay and block the sun. The thing with Dahl is, you know, he's been in 9 games. He started 5 of them. I think it's 5. Yeah. And he came in as a reserve in 4. And in the 4 games, he's come in as a reserve, which in essence is the equivalent of coming in as a pinch hitter. He's hit 2 home runs and almost hit a third one yesterday. He hit a sacrifice fly to the track, scored the only run in the game. He's looked good. Yesterday was against a left-handed pitcher. Right. He's got a history of really doing well against righties, including in the minors. Like, that is exactly the kind of bat that you're looking for to be on the bench if you need a left-handed pinch hitter off the bench. I think he brings more pop than Jake Cave. Cave only brings a little bit more versatility because he plays another position. But you have guys who could play first base now on this roster behind Harper. And Harper's going to play there 150 games, right? So assuming he doesn't get hurt. So I think that Dahl is more interesting to me than Cave. And I think that you're more likely to be meh about losing a guy if you lose Jake Cave to the waiver wire. Then
I think
would
those fans would feel that way.
If you lose Christian Pasha. Yeah. I think that you're more likely to, yeah.
Let me throw this one at you. There's a world where, you know, Christian Pache did not exist in the Phillies ecosystem this time last year. Is there a world where we're kind of like, we're sort of splitting hairs here? It's like, what are we really talking about? Dahl versus Marsh, Dahl versus Cave versus Pache. Like, is there maybe a guy that comes in 3 weeks from now that is outside this organization that just presents an obvious upgrade over what we're discussing currently?
Possibly. Anything's possible. I mean, you never know with Dombrowski, right? You just never know. He's always looking. He's always trying to tinker and find, you know, you're looking to find the right 26 guys that you want to go into the season with. And it's important for this Phillies team because they don't want to do what they did the last 2 years. That's the one message that has been, you know, prevalent since the start of this spring training is, we need a good start to the season. We don't want to do what we've done the last 2 years. They want to contend with the Braves and try and win the National League East. Yeah. And so they need to get off to a better start. And so it's important for them to go into the season with 26 guys that they feel like are their best 26. And if that means a couple of tough cuts, you know, for lack of a better term, then that's what it means. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible that player is out there still that they can bring in from another organization. And then this whole debate is moot. But as of right now, it's a 3-man race for the last bench spot between Pache, Cave, and Dahl. And the only way that changes is two of them make the team if they start Rojas in the minors.
Last thing I want to talk about with the roster real quick, because, again, I think that we're talking about fringe players at end of or edge of the roster. Just looking at the bullpen here, would you agree with the following assessment? Jose Alvarado, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Soto, Hoffman, Strom, Kirkering, all locks. That those six names represent absolute stone cold locks right now.
Correct.
So assuming that they carry eight relievers, how do they fill out the bullpen?
Yeah, those last two spots are really going to be interesting. And I kind of thought that Michael Mercado was a dark horse to get in there. They reassigned him to AAA yesterday, but more so because they wanted to, you know, just get him ready for the season. They think he's going to be. I asked Rob. I said, "Is he a guy that you look at that's going to help this team at the major league level this season?" And he said, "Absolutely." So, like, they really, really, really like him. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to like. Dude throws 98, 99. You know, he throws strikes. He's not wild. He's big. You know, he's an imposing figure on the mound. And he's got, you know, a real good sense of how to throw. They really like him a lot. So, I think at some point, whoever the two are that make the team on opening day are what they are. But I think Mercado's a guy that keep your eye on because I really think they like him a lot. Otherwise, you're probably looking at either Brogdon or Bilotti, and I think Brogdon is probably a little bit ahead of Bilotti because he's got a roster spot right now, whereas Bilotti does not. Because Bilotti's been pitching a lot for a non-roster guy. And then you need a long man, and whoever that long man is, it's not going to be Dylan Covey. He's not going to be ready for the start of the season. That doesn't mean that they don't want Dylan Covey. It's just that he was part of the group of players who've been shut down for a short period of time because of illnesses and things. But he's back there. I saw him yesterday. You need a guy who can go multiple innings. So who's that guy going to be? Right. I mean, that's the decision that you have to make. Is it a Spencer Turnbull, right? Who they brought in from the Tigers? Is he that guy? It depends. But, I mean, again, you're talking about really splitting hairs on a roster spot that's going to have 12 guys have it at some point during the season.
Do you think that with Turnbull, there's probably the – if you're the Phillies and you can kind of choose how this plays out, where they get him down to AAA and just kind of let him stay on schedule, try to keep him in a rotation-type situation where he provides that depth piece? Because that's the other thing. You look at this rotation, like – there is no Blake Snell here. There is no Jordan Montgomery here. They didn't do that thing that we talked about where you may, you know, bump out a Sanchez or a Walker or what have you and give yourself six viable starters. So if that's not going to happen, like, who is the guy if Taiwan Walker's knee becomes an issue again? Like, what happens then?
Yeah, they have a few names that they kind of throw into that mix. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Max Castillo is a guy that maybe gets that last spot. That could be a swing starter slash reliever for them. He's seen a lot of action too, and they've been impressed with him his last couple outings. And then you got Colby Allard, who is a left-handed guy. So if it depends, I guess it depends on who you're facing on a given night. Maybe he's a guy you call up. He started the first spring game, as a matter of fact. Right. Like, so there was something, it's something to see there. And then Phillips, who they just sent down yesterday. They want to stretch him out so that he's ready to go. I think that he's a possibility for, you know, spot start. Rock Thompson even said yesterday, he said, hey, if we need a guy, you know, we're very comfortable with him coming up and being the guy. The name I did not mention, but the name who was impressive yesterday was Mick Abel. Mick Abel pitched really good.
Yeah, I wanted to get to this. I see a fastball running away from Juan Soto at 95 at the top of the zone that he swings through. And I go, ooh, okay.
Yes.
What do we have here? So what did you see from him yesterday?
I mean, again, it was a short outing, but he looked really good. He was sharp. He challenged the hitters. And he got that. They went to him. It was interesting because they went to him to start an inning at the top of the Yankees lineup. And it was just like, all right, kid, go get the best player, one of the best players in the game. And he did. And he went through, you know, an inning and two thirds. I think he went yesterday. Really, really solid outing. Didn't give up a run. Just looked confident, was throwing strikes. I mean, those are important things. And, you know, against major league hitters. And so, you know, it was impressive. I liked him. I don't think he's ready yet, but could he be ready by June? You know, get him 10 starts in the minors, 10, 12 starts, and say, okay, now if we need a guy, we can go to Mick Abel. I think that's a real possibility.
Well, it was an interesting day from the developmental standpoint or the prospect standpoint in the Phillies system, because, you know, there's the three pitchers all grouped together. Painter, who we won't hear about for at least a few more months as he starts to work his way back. Obviously, Mick Abel was impressive. He seems to be on an upward trajectory right now. The other guy, Griff McGarry, got some news yesterday that he probably wasn't in love with, but probably saw coming here. What's the deal with Griff McGarry, and what are the Phillies going
to
do with him?
So the Phillies reassigned him to minor league camp yesterday, and with the intention of no longer having him be a starter. They are putting him in the bullpen, and they had to, because he just, his control issues are just, he loses it so quickly and then can't get it back. And it's just, it's a frustration for him. You can see it on his face after his outings. Like, he's sitting at his locker, just, you know, you could see him beating himself up quietly. Right. And I think that they feel as if maybe if we get him into a situation where he's only got to concentrate on throwing two pitches, you know, and, you know, face four batters maximum, and he can get maximum velocity out of his fastball, maybe then he can focus it a little bit better. And that's what they're hoping for. And, you know, Alex Coffey asked Rob, you know, is this a permanent move? And the way Rob answered the question, he didn't say it was. He did say that, you know, if things go well, they can always stretch him back out again. But the way he started answering, he says, that's a tough question. So when you're saying that, you know, if it was an automatic that, oh, no, we're just trying to get him right, and then we're going to make him a starter again, right, then you probably don't say that coming out as the first thing out of your mouth. So,
well, he's not exactly a young guy here either. Like, at his point in his developmental path, like, you start to kind of hone in on, like, this is what I'm going to be at the major league level. And this is sort of, you know, not a cautionary tale, because I don't know how this is going to play out. Maybe he turns into a dominant late inning reliever and we say, wow, you know, this guy still ended up being a really valuable piece at the highest level. But you look at where we were about 2 years ago with him, and it was like, well, he might actually be the most exciting out of all these guys. Like, the upside is just unbelievable. It's incredible. Yeah, like, there's a little bit more of a project element to him, but if we can really figure this out, holy crap, the potential is, you know, top of the rotation type guy. You know, fast forward now, and this has been a precipitous fall for him. to the point where you're reworking his entire mechanical approach, his entire delivery. Now you're reassigning him and what he's going to be moving forward. You hope that he's able to figure it out and find it, because you talk about the arm and the life and everything, and it's interesting, but man, like it is not going well for this guy over the last year and a half.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. And, and I got to see him pitch twice while I was down here, and he didn't look good in either one, mm-hmm. like really didn't. And so, yeah, they need to figure that out. But the luster is off that star for now,
as far as
a prospect, high prospect for the Phillies.
What else are you seeing down there, or what else do you want to talk about or hit on? Because that actually took care of all of my points. So, and I know we have a little bit of time left here.
Yeah, no, there's nothing else that's really major. I thought that the guys who pitched yesterday did a really nice job. And, you know, for the most part, even the home run that Luis Ortiz gives up was a pitch that was up and out of the zone. And Oscar Gonzalez went and got it and got his barrel on it and carried it out of the ballpark. But otherwise, you know, they did 9 innings of really good work yesterday. So that was nice. As far as the regulars go, I mean, I feel like they're just going through the motions. And the only guy that's really kind of stood out to me a little bit is Real Muto. I think Real Muto's at bats have been really solid so far in spring. I think that, you know, you watch him hit, and it's like, yeah, man, he looks a little different, right? He looks like he's got a little bit more. He's handling those pitches on the inner half a little bit better. You know, he's got really nice approaches at the plate. He's not swinging through a lot like he was doing at times last year. That's the one guy I've looked at and said, you know, of all the regulars, he's looking a little bit better than maybe most guys are at this point in spring training. And I think that's got to be a good sign.
He comes in age 33 season here. The last 3 years, I'm not going to go back into, you know, 2019, plays 145 games. I'm going to not count 2020 because of the season that it was. But last 3 years, 134, 139, 135. That's a lot of games.
Yeah.
It's a lot of games for a guy that's now approaching his, you know, not quite mid-30s, but he's getting there. What do you think the Phillies do with his workload? Do you think it remains, if I said, hey, over under 134 this season, you think they hit that target yet again? Do they play Garrett Stubbs a little bit more and try to ease off Real Muto? How do you kind of see them managing Real Muto's workload?
I think that they might try and keep him at the same amount of time played. I wouldn't be surprised though, if there's, hey, a day that, you know, we want to give Schwarber a day off. Maybe Real Muto DHs a game,
yeah,
and Stubbs plays and gives Stubbs an extra start behind the plate. So Real Muto keep his bat in the lineup, but he doesn't have to, you know, catch 9 innings. I think you might see a couple of those, not, and I'm not saying a lot, but maybe like 2 or 3 of those during the season, just to give him a few extra days of not catching. But I do think he catches 130 plus games again for them. Yeah.
I really want to get to the part where we start picking win totals and division winners, and
I know you do
the big predictions and who's going to be your all-stars this year, who's going to disappoint. I think can we do that? What is it, the 12th today? Like, is there a world where like late next week we can finally have that show? Are you going to make me wait another week?
Do we divide it up into two parts?
Like, yeah. I so desperately just want to start talking about the regular season, and I just don't want to talk anymore about Luis Ortiz eating innings as the eighth guy in the Phillies bullpen. I want to complain about Luis Ortiz once it happens. I don't want to talk about the roster projection of it.
Yeah, it's interesting, but that's the one thing I've really kind of noticed this year is that they have really tamped, you know, the guys that you think are going to be part of this just aren't playing a lot. Like, they're just kind of – I mean, they're getting their work in, right? But they're just not playing in these games. And I think it's because they just want to start the season with everyone healthy.
Yeah.
I think that's their approach. And whether that's the right one or not, you know, whether they feel like they're getting the one thing I will say, and it's pretty remarkable, because if you compare it around baseball, the Phillies do a really good job of managing the health of their pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really get, I mean, Andrew Painter aside, they don't have a lot of injuries. or long-term pitching injuries. You know, obviously Suarez missed some time last year. Alvarado was on a DL or IL twice. So, you know, they have them. I mean, it's not like they're completely immune, but they don't seem to get those major ones. Right. And although I think Taiwan Walker's a little out there sometimes with his assessments, he did say that because of their health, he feels like it's really possible that they have five starters who can make 30 starts this year. And that sounds crazy in today's Major League Baseball. It just sounds crazy to think that you can have five guys make 30 starts. But when you look at who these five guys are and their durability for the most part, it's not ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a ridiculous comment. It's just one that's, you know, you normally would say, okay, yeah, that's just, you know, something you're saying because you want to talk nicely about your teammates. But when you think about it, Wheeler pitches 33 starts. Nola pitches his 33 starts. Walker threw 33 last year. Suarez, if he's got a full year, this is the first time he's had a full spring training in forever, maybe ever, you know, he could do it. And Sanchez, I mean, I don't know if you get 30 starts out of Christopher Sanchez, maybe not, but still, even if you get 22, 23, right? And now you're at 140.
You beat me to it. I think you're going to get 22 starts out of him because I think that this is a team that come mid July is going to be sniffing around some potential upgrades.
Yeah, and that's fine. And that, but still, if with those five guys, if they give you 140 starts instead of 162, right? I mean, like, that's incredible. That's something that most teams don't have. So you got to give, I think you got to give the medical team a boatload of credit for how they manage their arms. And so when I sit there and say they're not throwing a lot of these guys, they're only throwing here and there, whatever, who am I to question it, right? Why? They know what they're doing. By the way, the one other name we didn't mention for the depth starting pitching, David Buchanan.
Yeah. What have you seen from our old friend?
Didn't see much. Yeah. I mean, he pitched the other day and he got hit around a little bit by Toronto.
That was a I talk about this sometimes, you know, you get down there and there are stories that are very obvious and you have to write them and they're interesting. And, you know, here's a guy that hasn't been around since, what, 2015, which is arguably the low point of this, whatever you want to call it. It wasn't a rebuild because it didn't exactly work out that way, but he was part of some really bad baseball here and he wasn't particularly good himself. Cool story. I kind of gave no time to it. I just said, okay, like if this guy is contributing in a meaningful fashion, something has gone wrong. And I understand the success that he had, you know, when he left the country and how he sort of rebuilt his career. And it's very admirable. I just can't see a world where that actually plays out here.
I can't
even. I don't think anything that's happened in Florida this month is really changed that.
No, I don't. I think you're spot on with that. But I just, right, it was just a name that we didn't
mention. If you would like to, then we could jump to one last thing if you want to get to it.
Yeah, I do. But one thing I want to do before I get to one last thing is just, I just wanted to point out yet another top pitcher with an injury yesterday. Did you see the Gerrit Cole thing for the Yankees?
Yes, I did.
That's that could change the whole dynamic of the American League if that turns out to be a significant injury.
Yeah, but, so he's what, undergoing the MRI today? Right?
Yeah.
Right elbow. So, yeah, I mean, that would definitely throw a wrench into things for the Yankees. I actually don't know how they would overcome that. In fact, I don't think they could overcome that. So
I don't either. I think that takes them from – if you lose Gerrit Cole for the year, the Yankees, in my mind, go from being a World Series contender to being a team that might miss the playoffs. Like, that's how important I think he is to that
team. If you are a Giants and Yankees fan yesterday, you didn't have a great day. And I'm not saying that the Eagles signing Saquon Barkley is some slam dunk. So yeah. I might for a running back. Just turn on WIP. You'll listen to them talk about it for the next 4 days. But, man, like, tough day. Like, franchise icon goes down to a rival football team, and then the best pitcher in baseball might be out for the year. You know, we'll see. Hopefully that's not the case. I mean, listen, you know, certainly I would never – I do not root for – injuries, even for teams I don't like, you know, I've as a kid, you know, never really adopted that theory. Like, I just don't want to see guys go down I'm sure that there's some Red Sox fans and there's some Orioles fans that are ready to win the AL East, and they're not upset about this little bump in the road for Cole, but we'll see. I mean, to be honest with you, I saw the reports he's going to undergo the MRI. Are there any indications that we're expecting to go in and see something here?
No. I mean, the way that the Phillies played the Yankees yesterday, and we were down there for this, and I was not talking to Brett Boone when he brought it up, but just the conversations going on in the press box were that it was concerning that he was not recovering from a 40 pitch outing like he does normal, like he would normally, and that the recovery was more like what he felt when he would throw, 100 pitches in a regular season. And so there's a concern that there's an issue there. You know, it's not that he's not feeling pain, it's just discomfort. Well, what does that mean? Right. What does that mean? I don't know. Something weird in my elbow. I feel like, it might not be sharp pain, but if I call it discomfort, it's still bothering me. It's hurting me, right? Yeah. So what does that mean? And you got to get it checked out. You hear something about a pitcher's elbow, man, with discomfort and needing an MRI, I can't imagine that he's going to start the season at least. And then it probably goes into the season, and depending on how severe it is, it could be the whole season. Right. I mean, that's a scary, scary thing.
Yeah. I think you start to kind of hold your breath when a guy's going into he'll be 33, played most of the season as a 33-year-old. I mean, there's some tread on those tires. I mean, he's thrown 200 plus innings each of the last 2 years, 181 the year before it. I mean, hold your breath on that one if you're a Yankees fan.
But here is my real one. Here's my real one last thing, Bob. Speaking of Giants and not the football team, let's go back to baseball. Did you see what they did to J.D. Davis yesterday?
I did not.
Okay. So J.D. Davis wins an arbitration case against them. And the debate was over, I think it was $400,000, roughly. I could be off by a few bucks, but it's roughly $400,000. He wins the arbitration, and then they let him go. And so he only gets the portion of the of the money that's guaranteed, like it's a $1.1 million as opposed to, and I think that he was supposed to get, in arbitration, he gets 6.6, and they offered like 6.2. And so then he walks away with just 1.1 because they just let him go. If you're a player, right? And now, there's a lot of conversation that comes out. Like, the Giants are players for all these, big name, acquisitions. They got the money and they never seem to get them. I wonder why they never seem to get them. And then you see them do something like this to a guy, and you no longer have to ask yourself why the players don't necessarily want to play there, because that is a bad way to do business.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I'm looking at this here. He wins the case for $6.9 million. $6.9 million, and they owe him all, or they'll save all but $1.1 million of it.
Yeah.
Thanks to a little negotiated CBA wrinkle.
Yep.
Which the Players Association might want to tidy that up moving forward.
That's unreal. And it was, again, I think that the difference, if you got the story there, is it like $400,000 was what the arbiter was deciding between?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so over 400 grand. Like, they're going to hold this guy up over 400 grand, and then just the
Giants say that they negotiated the arbitration deals in good faith, did so with Davis, just came down to roles and roster crunch in the trade market, didn't materialize for him, so they released him.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what it was. Yeah. I'm sure that's what it was. That's just bad for first of all, it's bad for the sport, right? That you have ownership groups that will do that. But it's just bad business. And what is it? And what's the message you send to players? What's the message you send to your fans? What's the message to anybody who follows this? I mean, that's just, it's not good. It's not a good organization, man. Just not.
Is it? It's a shame that J.D. Davis doesn't play center field.
Yeah, I mean, guy hit what, 16 home runs last year? I mean,
he's a decent player. Yeah, he's
a part-time guy. I mean, can only really play first and third. I mean, can't really play anywhere else. I think they tried him in left field a little bit, but whatever. Not a fit for the Phillies. But I hope he lands somewhere, and I hope he has a really good season. That's what I'm rooting for right now. Just kind of egg on the face of the Giants.
He's probably going to the Dodgers and Padres first. Hey guys, I know you're loaded, but you know, especially exactly. The Padres, I mean, the guy at the infield there. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, for Anthony Sanfilippo, I'm Bob Wankel. Thanks for tuning in to Crossed Up. Make sure that you're following us on YouTube, anywhere that you get your shows. You can follow Anthony on X or Twitter at AntSanPhil. You can follow me at Bob_Wankel. We will be back, I don't know when, either later this week when Anthony comes north or potentially early next week. And we will talk to you then.